in tax-advantaged giving, strengthening nonprofits, and improving lives. Visit KenoshaFoundation.org.
This is WGTD HD serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, a program that's designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first Saturday of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. In today's show, I'm going to talk about two things that are more interrelated than you might just initially think. So the first one has to do with what is happening in terms of the AI landscape here, where a small business can use AI and do so safely, and even mid-sized businesses, and the implications of that. And then the second piece is going to be around the adoption of the right technology. How do you navigate those nuances that are associated with that right technology? And where are you getting that advice from? So let's jump into that. So, you know, in this, on Breakfast Bites for, you know, the last 20 years here, I've always talked about things that are relevant to the issues that are facing people today. And so it's not theoretical stuff. It's not rehashing the news from other people. These are the issues that I see directly and experience directly in working with businesses. So I always love to use examples as well. So let's take the example of a 100-person law firm. And I think that this is exemplar for the challenges that a lot of organizations are going to face going into a landscape of trying to be competitive in an era of AI. And, you know, frankly, they're just going to have to do the things that they probably should have already had done 10 years ago, but just never decided to allocate the time and money to it. So again, let's start from an example. Law firm, 100 people in the law firm, and how much risk do they have? There are some really interesting tools out there. And those tools, you can run them on an environment, and those tools will show how much risk there is from the data that simply exists in an environment. And it's rather insightful. And part of that insightfulness can reveal numbers, and these are some real numbers that I've looked at. $9 million in risk. Yep. So imagine that 100-person company, based upon the data that they had, was calculated by this, you know, official assessment tool that follows government standards. That assessment tool calculated it out at $9 million, roughly, right? Roughly. I'm rounding here. But roughly $9 million worth of risk. So if you're looking at potentially $9 million worth of risk, then, you know, something that's maybe like a $40,000 expenditure doesn't seem like that big of a deal in the magnitude of the issue. Yet, what I find is that most of the time, organizations of even that large, they're balking at something that's $40,000. Let's just say it's a project to correct the security around that data. Now, we need to have security around that data because a plethora of reasons. I mean, everybody's wanting to use AI now so that they can be more efficient, so that they can remain competitive. But there are internal and external risks associated with AI. So those risks are employees using a search that is from AI that is seeing into things that employee would not otherwise have visibility into. You know, they wouldn't have found that information, but the AI is capable of finding the information within that organization. So you could have a situation where an employee stumbles upon a salary report, as an example. Okay. So that's one area, is where if you don't have really good data governance, then people who shouldn't have accessed material are able to access material. So they didn't do anything like, you know, they're not skirting the system. They're not abusing their authority. They're not doing any of that stuff. They're just having the data appear to them because the AI search functions found the data because there wasn't good data governance. So the other problem with a lack of good data governance is that in this world of AI, that data is just going to get exposed. Like, let's take an example of you don't have good data to governance and the policies to go with it. Then you have people in a company who are maybe using AI in ways, or they're either using unapproved AIs or they're using AIs in an unapproved way. Either way, what's happening is then confidential data ends up in the public domain. And that's bad enough when it's your own company's confidential data, but it's even more catastrophic when it's customers' confidential data. So sometimes confidential data doesn't have to be things like personally identifiable information or protected health information. It doesn't have to be that. It doesn't have to be things like payment card data. It could just simply be a contract. So if the terms and conditions of a contract became known to a competitor, that could be damaging to the competitiveness of that particular company. So let's go back to this example if you're talking about a law firm. The law firm has risk of just bad mojo happening from like a cybersecurity perspective and then the data getting exfiltrated. Okay, that's one major issue. Another issue is from AI just having inappropriate data governance or the wrong AIs or unapproved AIs being used or AIs being used in an unapproved manner. And this is exactly the outcome that happens when you don't have policies, you don't have training, and you don't have data governance. Okay, so that's really the trifecta right there. Policies? Well, no, I should say there's more to that, right? It has to be policies and enforcement. You can't just like have a policy that nobody's ever held accountable to adhering to. So policies and enforcement, data governance, and training. Now, if we want employees to be successful, they have to be empowered to be successful. The way you empower them is you have good policies that establish guardrails and boundaries, and then you couple that with training. And yes, of course, you have to have enforcement. I know I brought this up before on a previous show where I was talking about real world examples of a company whose manager had effectively told staff, is all the direct reports, that you don't have to do the training. I mean, the actual language was, if you sales is the most important thing. So if you have things to do that are associated with sales, then do those first and ignore everything else. Yet, literal, real world, what are they doing in that particular office on a daily basis? You find that they've got the last 15 minutes of the day every day where nothing productive is happening. And they were extremely inefficient throughout the day because these people perpetually had very poor understanding as to how to use the technology that they were already in possession of. They had all this technology at the fingertips, and none of it was being competently used. None of it. And then training is available, but when the manager puts forth this story that says training is absolutely not important, don't do the training, and we're not going to hold you accountable to doing any training, you have a full self-fulfilling prophecy of payroll getting lit on fire. So not only has it been established that it's okay to goof off the last 15 minutes of the workday every day, but it's also been established that you as an employee are not accountable to knowing how to use the technology that the company has paid for and provided to you as a tool to use to do your job. So you certainly don't end up with a result then at that point in time that anybody's going to adhere to policies. Because one of the pieces of policies is people have to be trained on the policies. people don't get trained on the policies by having a once a year theatrical session of here's the policy, read it, and then now suddenly become in conformance to it. And so it's then employees are being asked to read a policy and attest to the fact that they are going to act in accordance with the policy, but there's no supportive ongoing effort for that. So frankly, it's compliance theater. It's compliance theater. This aspect that I just talked about is the delineator to solve the two problems that I articulated here in the beginning. One is the risk that's happening to these organizations from, you know, AI and how they want to be competitive. And then the other risk where they don't have the right advisors, they don't have the right tools, they don't have the right guardrails, they don't have the right policy. A lot of times the tools, it's a very, very, it's an art form to come up with this statement about what tools we're going to use and how. Now, I want to shift to another example. Again, totally real world. This happened earlier this week. There was a gentleman on a forum who was asking advice for how to price and package and sell certain things that were necessary into a larger business. So the example that he gave was Office 365 licensing into a business of 400 people. And I have long and very direct firsthand experience of knowing the challenges that, say, a 50-person or a 100-person or a 400-person business encounters. And those problems that those larger organizations face are absolutely very different from the problems that a 15-person organization has. Straight up, as soon as you get to like 30 employees, you will have problems that require very operationally mature methods to address. The things that work for an 8-person company, they don't work at 25 and 30 employees. So this person who was on this forum, he was talking about Office 365 or Microsoft 365 licensing, and he was going at it from a very technical engineer perspective. I was like, well, I could do this or this. And I looked at the whole thing and I'm like, this is the wrong person to be advising this particular organization. So he's trying to sell into a customer who's 400 to 450 employees. And yet he was sitting there trying to split hairs over what could be done on a bare minimum basis. It wasn't even remotely a discussion of risk. And that's what it has to be. So I brought up these points about how if you're an organization of that size, here's what I can pretty much guarantee you is going on. The entire revenue source of an organization that large is going to be based upon terms and conditions in contracts with customers. So let's just use some examples. Let's say you happen to have contracts with customers, and as part of those contracts, you have to have a certain insurance policy in place at a certain level. And so as the business who becomes the provider, whether it be services or product, doesn't really matter. You have to ensure that your operations and your conduct across the board are in compliance with the things that you said in the insurance application were definitely exemplar of the posture of your organization. So if you said you had multi-factor authentication on everything, well, then you have to have multi-factor authentication on everything. And if you say in your insurance application, I have XYZ in throughout our organization, and then you do something different throughout the year, that from every attorney I've ever talked to is construed as a breach of contract. Okay, so as an executive management decision maker, you're looking at your revenue stream, and your revenue stream is contingent upon these contracts. you promised your contract, your customer, and you acknowledged that as a condition of doing business with this customer, you had these certain things in place, but then you didn't have those things in place. And that then becomes, you're breaching the contract. So from an executive management perspective, the entire revenue of the company is then at risk. So this becomes the risk versus cost analysis that has to happen. What you as an executive decision maker cannot be doing is you cannot be having conversation with technical people who are advising you on what licensing to get. So we're just talking about tools here. If they don't understand the entire stream. So I'm talking about the actual logistics of getting that deployed through an organization, maintaining the posture throughout the entire year that you said was going to be there. Who's going to help provide you that attestation documentation? This cannot be a race to the bottom. If I look at licensing pricing differential, because we're talking about risk versus cost here, a licensing pricing differential for an organization that has, like, let's say you have a $10 million policy, that licensing pricing differential might turn into another $25,000 to $50,000 a year. And again, let's say you're a 400 to 450 user company. That, like, you know, I'm not saying the $25,000 to $50,000 is nothing. I'm saying that it's a very, very puny incremental differential in cost of doing business. And if the risk of not having the right licensing, along with obviously having it implemented in the technical controls in place that, you know, bring those things to fruition of effectiveness. But like if the cost differential, let's just, you know, throw out a number, a fully implemented number, let's just call it $100,000. If I'm that executive management decision maker, and if I have a choice between I'm going to put, say, $400 million in revenue at stake, at risk, because I didn't spend another $100,000 in project and licensing to get something taken care of, that's not a very good business decision. And so my point here is that you look at an executive management team, and they have to put themselves in a position to be making informed risk management decisions. There's really two pieces to that. First, they have to actually take the time to become informed themselves. But second, they have to ensure that they're getting advice from somebody who's capable of having that risk management decision with them. And like I said, this guy on this forum that I saw, you know, earlier this week, he was trying to piecemeal out licensing. And he was trying to, you know, race to the bottom and wasn't actually looking at the tool set that needed to be in place, plus implemented status of that, that would really actually mitigate the risk of a customer that size. Because all organizations of that size, I don't care what the industry is, they have substantial risk. And that substantial risk has to be managed through a very concerted, consistent effort of tools plus data governance plus human action. And usually that human action is going to come down to training plus enforcement. So it's setting expectations with employees, having them do the training, whether it's, do you understand these policies? Do you understand the tools? And then the enforcement of evaluating, are you using the tools effectively? And are you acting in accordance with policies? There has to be a governance structure. So technical controls are very important, but human validation and oversight is also very important. And oftentimes, that is not an IT process. In fact, I would argue the majority of the time, that is not an IT process. If you think that your average IT director or IT manager has the kind of personnel management or data governance compliance manager sort of oversight skill sets, I mean, I haven't seen it. I literally haven't seen it. I mean, some of the most successful compliance managers that I've seen have been either highly technical paralegals or someone who was highly technical that had maybe run businesses before. So they really had a great deal of exposure to every facet of running a business. It was interesting. I was listening to a presentation recently by one of the top score mentors in the entire country. He's a guy that has 45 years of experience and has done a huge amount of consulting work for massive multinational companies. It was really interesting to hear his perspective on things. He was talking about the quantity of people in an organization who actually have a full grip and a grasp on the overall operations and status of an organization. And it was really interesting because across the board, didn't matter the size of the organization, it was his assessment that no more than three people, and that it was always the owner. The owner was the one who had the ultimate responsibility. So, I mean, he talked about a company that had 13,000 users, for example. And in that, he said, yeah, there's all these, you know, presidents and there's, you know, a lot of executives. However, despite that, there's really only three people in the company that really had a grasp of what was going on across all these organizations. So the reason that this is really fascinating is because, again, who should an executive management team look to for the advisory on how to close some of these gaps that they have in their environment? And they better be looking to another executive. The problems that I frequently find is when they are overly reliant upon their easy button decision, which is, I'm just going to look to my IT department. That looks and smells like an IT problem, so I'm going to make it an IT problem, even though, you know, I've been in this industry for 30 years, and I can tell you that there's not a single IT director that I've ever met or ever worked with. And that's across a lot of organizations, several hundred organizations. I've never seen an IT director who had the background to be able to have the data points to be successful in that sort of an advisory capacity. You know, it's just not something they're exposed to. I'm not saying that these people are, you know, not intellectual. I'm saying that they just don't have that kind of background or exposure. And so, you know, that over reliance upon it becomes the kryptonite. And I see this, it's my direct observation. You know, like I was telling you about, like, take that example of 100-person law firm. They're very fixated on, well, you know, we're going to have our IT director do this. Well, your IT director has no idea how to lead through the problem of data governance insufficiencies, because if that person knew how to solve that problem wouldn't, it wouldn't exist. You know, I oftentimes see this, you know, you'll see an IT director be involved in an organization for well more than a decade. And I'm not going to be too critical here and say that, you know, every problem that exists is because of that IT director, because that's clearly not the case. But I will say that if a problem still exists after that period of time and the needle hasn't moved, meaning the status hasn't moved, if things haven't improved substantially over that period of time, then the IT director is a portion of the problem. So simply looking at that person and saying, we're going to engage in confirmation bias and assume that that person is going to be the you know, savior of our problems. Like, we only need to talk to that one person to get the advice on how to solve that problem. Then that's not a recipe for success. I mean, I don't even think it's fair to the IT director, because you're not, you know, you're expecting that person whose day-to-day job, frankly, an IT director, is tech support. In the vast majority of organizations, an IT director rarely has an opportunity to do anything strategic. They don't do R&D. They don't do policies. they end up doing tech support, you know, or migrations or projects or something like that. It's definitely not a strategic leadership role. So they just don't have time to do that. So then, you know, don't expect them to do those things because it's not a recipe for success. So now couple that with going back to this other topic that's still related. So now how then are you expecting your IT director to become the expert in AI strategy? Again, not a realistic expectation. So if you're trying to go into this 2025 and trying to be competitive, then what I think you have to have is you have to have a CTO. You have to have a chief technology officer. That doesn't mean you have to have a full-time internal chief technology officer. But if you have like an IT service provider who doesn't have that CTO person who's advising you, and maybe it's part of, maybe you just don't have access to that person because you're not paying for that service. You know, if they've offered it, but you're not consuming that service, well, you know, then that's on you because you're basically saying, I don't want to have access to that resource. So that would be something to revisit. I can tell you that I've personally spent probably 500 hours doing real implementation work on what you would basically refer to as AI readiness. I mean, how do we have the human policies, the human training, the governance, the data governance, the data structure, the technical controls, the human controls, and how do you put personnel managers in a position to be successful, not only setting expectations for employees, but also then holding them accountable to those expectations. And I don't know of anybody else that's done that hard work. I did that hard work because I was interested in it and driven to do it. And I'm very, very concerned about data governance. And I wanted to make sure that we had it taken care of here at QPC for us. And so I went down that pathway and just, you know, took care of it. So of course, in that process, I'm in a position to be able to understand how clients are needing to address that. And by the way, this whole situation from like the strategic combined with the technical, it changes fairly frequently, at least monthly, if not more frequently. And so it becomes a process of, do you have an ongoing relationship with that advisor who is staying on top of those things? It's kind of like when you look at sometimes some attorneys and certainly some CPA firms, they will have, or you know, tax advisors, they will have a like an annual services plan where you are paying them for an annual service at a flat rate and they have an advisory relationship with you. So that relationship is there. And that way, you know, when they have a new thing they're coming up with, something that they think you should be aware of, then they're sending you that information and, you know, you can ask questions about it. And that's all part of a proactive management sort of relationship to ensure that you're staying up on top of these things that you would have no mechanism to stay up on top of them by yourself. So it's how do you get connected with your expert? And so I think it's imperative that as a business decision maker, that you understand you do have to stay on top of these things, but you have to make sure that you're getting advice from the right place. Because I consistently am seeing people getting advice from the wrong place, and it's a real disservice to them, and it's going to have some major risk implications. And I've seen it already happen where data breaches have happened because of lack of technical controls and lack of appropriate CTO leadership. Well, that's all I've got for today, and I hope you enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first Saturday of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, go to her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, you can be part of the restoration project of Kenosha's historic ceremonial courtroom. Gifts of any amount are appreciated. They'll be noted on a display within the courthouse. A donation link can be found at kenoshafoundation.org.